This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
What's going on? Thanks for tuning in. We have a really awesome show for you today where we welcome Dr. Robert Enright and we talk about forgiveness. And I want to read his full professional bio because it is quite impressive. Normally, we try to keep these short. This one's going to be a little longer, but you're going to want to listen. Dr. Enright holds the Aristotelian Professorship in Forgiveness Science within the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's a licensed psychologist and co-founder of the International Forgiveness Institute, a not-for-profit organization dedicated to the dissemination of knowledge about forgiveness and community renewal through forgiveness. And the really exciting thing is he's really just the unquestioned pioneer in the scientific study of forgiveness, having published the first empirically based journal article on person-to-person forgiveness in 1989. And he's been called the forgiveness trailblazer by Time Magazine and is often introduced as the father of forgiveness research. And you'll know why when you listen to today's show and obviously having heard his bio, but Robert has a lot of extensive knowledge in this that you will be able to apply to yourself and your relationships.
Yeah, he does give us a great foundation of walking through the process of forgiveness. So maybe you're struggling with forgiveness in your relationship or friendship. This episode is a great place to start, and then followed by all of his blogs, and he's written a couple books on forgiveness. So we hope you guys check it out. As always, thank you so much for tuning in, for sharing the podcast with your friends and family, for leaving us those reviews. We appreciate it. And if you have a chance, check out our website, idpodcast.com, where we have a ton of free resources, over 300 episodes, and the link to our online course, Spark My Relationship, where you can get $100 off the course. So we hope you guys check out the website and enjoy today's episode. Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
It's my honor to be with you, Sarah.
Robert, we are excited to talk to you today about forgiveness. And you have extensive scientific study of forgiveness, one of the first to really do it. And so who better to talk about this than yourself? So thank you for coming on the show. Let's dive in and talk about why you chose to study forgiveness. And then we'll talk about what it looks like, the psychology of it, and how we can get better at it individually and in our relationships.
Sure. Well, I was hired in 1978 by the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Educational Psychology Department to study moral issues. And at the time, academics were very complacent and all falling in line under the umbrella of justice, or how people think about justice or how they be fair to others. And I was very obedient to that. And I got tenure studying that question about how people think about fairness, and I had my grants and all that. And I woke up one day and asked myself a very dangerous question. I asked, who am I helping by my research? And I concluded, well, a few of my academic friends whom I meet once a year at conferences, and we pat ourselves on the back and then off we go. And so I decided, I used the expression, I threw all my research over a cliff. on justice. And I had a lot of publications, and I've never gone back and read one word of those. And so I started asking myself the question, what in the area of morals, the idea of virtues or values, might be helpful to people? And the idea of forgiveness kept coming up. And so I, back then, it was actually 1985 when I finally decided to not comply with academic conformity. I actually, it was so primitive back then, I actually had to walk to the library to get information. And so I went and asked the librarian to do a search of the scientific published literature on the topic of forgiveness. And a half hour later, she came back and she had a blank piece of paper and said, there isn't any. So I thought, ooh, this might be an area where you could really carve out a career. And so I asked a number of graduate students from different world zones like Israel and Greece and Saudi Arabia if they wanted to sit around with me in a Friday seminar to start talking about forgiveness, and called it the Friday Forgiveness Seminar, and it's still going to this day. And I didn't realize, because I was naive, but a firestorm happened for me. Academia didn't like me anymore because they said, forgiveness in the hard-headed realm of social science, why, we're above that. That's much too soft and mushy. You're going to ruin your career. And I thought, so be it. And the graduate students and I continued, and now there are many thousands of researchers and many thousands of therapists following our lead. So I'm glad I didn't listen to those who like to conform.
We are glad as well. So let's dive in. What did you find about the psychology of forgiveness?
Well, what we basically found was that forgiveness is a paradox in that you are trying to be good to those who are not good to you. And that's partly why it was so controversial. It seemed counterintuitive to the social scientific mind. And we realized that when people follow a particular pathway of forgiveness that we call the process model and give themselves enough time, really good things happen. Where when you've been treated unjustly by others and you paradoxically struggle to be good to those who are not good to you, your self-esteem can rise, your anger, anxiety, and depression can go down, and your sense of hope for the future can go up. And so we've done this kind of work in drug rehabilitation, people who, women who've had the violence of incest. We've worked with women who've been in relationships that have gone bad. And we've done forgiveness education with youth in Iran and inner city Milwaukee and Belfast, Northern Ireland. And in virtually all cases, people basically get their lives back when they've been crushed by the injustices of others.
Can you talk a little bit about the process model for forgiveness and walk us through it?
Yeah, it's basically a roadmap. And we have to realize that forgiveness is not something new. It's new in the social sciences, but it's ancient. It has its roots in Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Confucianism. But all of those are telling you how to live the right life, and they don't provide necessarily a roadmap for how you go about forgiveness, even though they all honor forgiveness. And so that was part of our job in the social sciences. And so this process model has what we call four phases. And the first phase, we give the person the freedom to grieve what has happened, to be angry about what has happened, to be confused about what has happened, and not rush the forgiveness process. And people begin to realize in this first phase that we call the uncovering phase, that there are a lot of effects that happen unexpectedly when we've been treated very unfairly, like we lose sleep, we ruminate on the issue, we don't let it go, we become very pessimistic. And so we bring all of that out with people, and they say, hey, you know, the way I'm living my life after being treated so unfairly is not in my best interest. And so then we move to the second phase that we call the decision phase, where we ask, would you like to try forgiveness? it's nothing forced on anybody. It's whether they want to give it a shot or not. Most people at that point, when they realize how deeply and negatively they've been affected by injustice, say yes. So in the decision phase, we go through what forgiveness is. We say, well, when you forgive, you will try to get rid of resentment, which is what I call anger on steroids. It's a lot of anger that won't quit over a long period of time. And you will try to offer goodness of some kind, such as kindness or respect or generosity or love toward the other person. You won't be excusing what the other did. You won't be abandoning justice. You won't forget. And you may or may not reconcile. Reconciliation isn't a moral virtue like forgiveness. And so reconciliation is a two-way street. You say yes and the other says yes. If the other doesn't say yes to that, you can forgive without reconciling. Do you want to do it? So when people say yes, we enter the work phase, the third of four phases. And we start with thinking. And the thinking exercises we do before feeling exercises because we're usually not in control of our own feelings. So we go through what we call the personal, global, and cosmic perspectives. The personal perspective is basically this. Who is the one who hurt you? Do we define that person forever only by those actions against you? Or is there more to the person than that? Is the person wounded? Out of a person's own woundedness, did they wound you? And so we look at the history of the one who hurt you. And oftentimes, the one who hurts you, if it's grave, oftentimes has grave wounds from others, maybe from childhood. And now they're dumping the truck onto you. And so we see the person not as evil incarnate, defining that person only by what they have done, but we see a wounded person. That's the personal perspective. And then the global perspective asks about to see if you can see the shared humanity you have with the other, the unconditional worth you both have because you're both special, unique, and irreplaceable in this world. Look at your DNA. There's never a person like you ever. Never will be once you die. Same with the one who hurt you. If you cut, you bleed. If the other cuts, the other bleeds. And you're both going to die one day. So we see a shared humanity, a common worth, an unconditional worth, what we call an inherent built-in worth that isn't earned. So we put those two together where you see a wounded person who shares a lot with you. And then we, depending on the person's worldview, we may enter into what we call a cosmic perspective or a transcendent or a spiritual perspective. But not if a person doesn't have a spiritual view. But if the person does, for example, let's say you're working with someone who comes from a Judeo-Christian perspective, we ask this, is it true or not that you have been made in the image and likeness of God? And that's in Genesis 1, and it's repeated in that very chapter. And then, oh, yeah, okay, I'm made in the image and likeness of God. And so we have a little drum roll, please. And we ask, well, is it true that the one who hurt you is made in the image and likeness of God? So when we put all three perspectives together, we see much more broadly than we're used to seeing. And we see the person is wounded, sharing a common humanity, and both made in the image and likeness of God, loved by God. Then we say, then who is this other person? And when we start seeing that, we begin to see what I call movement of the heart. Some, even a little tiny bit of compassion toward the other starting to emerge naturally without forcing it. And a compassion is to suffer along with the other. And then still in the work phase, once the person gets strong enough, we say, are you willing to bear the pain of what happened so you don't throw the pain back to the other person? Which is quite heroic, actually, because you're not taking the eye for an eye anymore. And so when a person can see more broadly who the other is and soften the heart toward the other and is standing in the pain so you're not throwing the pain back to the other, we ask, well, who are you? I mean, think about that. You're standing in pain for another person. Who are you? And the self-esteem starts rising at that point. And then when they're strong enough to bear the pain, we ask, and this is getting at the moral virtue nature of forgiveness now, we say, are you willing to give a gift of some kind to the one who hurt you? See, that's what got me into all the trouble in the first place in academia. Giving a gift to the one who hurt you, well, that's absurd. Well, no, not if you're practicing forgiveness. You might give a smile or a return phone call. If the person's deceased, you might contribute to charity in the person's name. And that's the paradox of forgiveness, where you're giving where the world would tell you not to. Then we end up with the fourth phase, or the discovery phase, where we start to see new meaning in what we've suffered. What usually happens here when people go through the work phase is they become more sensitive to the suffering of others. They're attuned to it with their spouse, they're attuned to it with their children, with their coworkers, not necessarily the one who hurt them. And so they see that this suffering was not for nothing. And then people develop a new purpose in life. For example, one gentleman with whom I worked is in prison for life. And he said, I'm not going to get out, but my task now in prison is to help alleviate the resentments of those who are in prison with me. And so he's being a conduit of good, a healer within prison. And near the end of this discovery phase, what we tend to find is what we find scientifically. People are released from the emotional prison, where the anger, anxiety, and depression go down, the hope and the self-esteem rise as the person forgives. The person gets one's life back.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors. When you work full-time, have kids, and run a podcast, it's hard to make time for a multiple-step skincare protocol. That's why I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. Let me repeat it. They make it easy. No complicated routine, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. If you're looking for skincare products that are simple and effective, for a limited time, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your first OneSkin purchase when using the code IDO when you check out at oneskin.co. I've been using OneSkin's body lotion for about a month, and I've already seen noticeable improvements with small wrinkles and textures on my skin, specifically on the back of my neck and the back of my hands, two places where I get a lot of sun. Plus, my skin looks and feels healthier all around. It's all thanks to OneSkin's revolutionary OS-01 peptide, the first ingredient proven to deactivate aging cells responsible for lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. Unlike traditional skincare products that only mask symptoms, OneSkin pioneered a new approach integrating tissue engineering and cutting-edge science to enhance skin biology for lasting resilience against aging. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using the code IDO at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with the code IDO. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support your show and tell them we sent you. After a decade of hosting this podcast and talking to hundreds of experts, we know that money is one of the biggest stressors in relationships. Now, while worrying about money and anxiously awaiting payday doesn't help, Earnin actually does by putting the money you earn in your hands today. Our sponsor, Earnin, is an app that gives you access to your pay-as-you-work up to $100 a day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an additional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Many couples end up fighting about finances, especially when surprise costs arise. Earnin allows you to seamlessly deal with the unexpected trip to the vet or that splurge on date night without the added stress, letting you both focus on what really matters. Earnin is helping millions of Americans feel self-sufficient and to worry and fight less about money. All of this without debt traps, mandatory fees, or credit checks. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in relationship advice under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. That's relationship advice under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Well, thank you for laying that all out so beautifully. I know a lot of work went into developing those phases. What would you tell someone who is stuck in a phase? Maybe we could start with just phase one of freedom to grieve and someone's angry, and that's good. But what if we're just staying angry and we can't go into the decision phase and phase two?
Well, that's okay. See, we have to give people permission for that. We have to give people permission to be who they are. Sometimes that anger phase can last for weeks after the person comes to say, look, I need some help with this. And that's not at all dishonorable, because being treated unjustly can lead to these wounds that people literally can carry to their grave. And so if the person remains angry to such a degree that it looks like the person cannot get out of that, here's what we tend to do. We say, does this person whom you are trying to forgive remind you of somebody else who hurt you? And characteristically, that is the case. Let's say you're having trouble forgiving your spouse. Let's say the spouse is female. Oftentimes what happens when the one trying to forgive, the female spouse, stays very angry and entrenched in that, the spouse, the female, is actually reminding the forgiver of the mother, one's own mother, and how one grew up. So every time you look at your spouse, you are reminded of your mother, and that anger wells up. And so you're not getting unstuck from your spouse. So we say, hold the phone here. Let's not continue forgiving your spouse. Let's take some time out and forgive your mom first. And that could take months. And once one forgives mom, now when one looks at one's spouse, that anger doesn't tumble into that relationship. And the person now can much more freely go ahead into the decision phase with the spouse. It's rare, but when it happens, we definitely have a move to make to free the person of that anger.
For individuals who are in a romantic relationship, can they engage their partner in this process of forgiveness? Obviously, it can be done kind of on your own, but how much of it is collaborative or could be collaborative?
Ideally, it should be collaborative. One of the goals of forgiveness is reconciliation, but because we don't have control over the other's behavior and will, it doesn't always happen. But a major goal of forgiveness is to give your hand to the one who fell into the pit and say, here, take my hand and come up to a higher level so we can be equal again in how we treat one another. Some people try to bite your hand off when you do that. Others will willingly take it and say, thank you. And so it's very important that forgiveness be entered into mutually. But again, it's a free will decision. Both have to willingly say yes to that. And when they do, truly beautiful things can happen for relationships, far greater than people might imagine when they don't have forgiveness on the table for discussion, which sadly doesn't happen enough.
Have you found in your research that when there is reconciliation, that those relationships are even better, or people's self-esteem is even stronger than if it was just the forgiveness aspect of it?
Well, we don't know the answer to that because forgiving can be so idiosyncratic. But we do know that when people do practice forgiving together, where they both forgive and both seek forgiveness, it's not just forgiving, but seeking forgiveness, very good things happen. We haven't done comparative studies, so I can't really answer that question, Sarah. But we do know that people can get the relationships back, not just their individual lives back. But then the lesson learned is keep doing that, even for the small things, so that if there's a big thing that they have to climb the mountain to forgive, let's say infidelity, for example, which indeed can be overcome through forgiving and seeking forgiveness, continue that when you forget to bring home the milk when you promised you would, or you're having a bad day. Keep the forgiveness process alive in the family.
What would you tell someone who is in phase two and they're working to get rid of resentment and they're just really struggling? They're really struggling to not hold that. And let's say in the context of a romantic relationship, what are some things they can think about to work through that feeling?
The big motivation in the beginning is how your inner world is progressing in this life. In other words, as an analogy, if you're in a stormy sea and you're drowning, and I throw you a life preserver, you're going to grab that. You're going to be very thankful for that. You're not going to worry about what the stock market is doing today or what you're going to get for your birthday. You want that life preserver. And it's the same thing here when someone is in a rocky relationship and is stuck for the decision phase. They need the life preserver. And that's why we ask, well, how is life going for you now? And if the person says, I'm tired, I'm discouraged, my hope is down, we say, we do have a life preserver for you. And it's been empirically tested, and it's called forgiveness. Would you like to try it? Virtually everybody does. I actually can't remember in any of our studies where someone said, well, I hear what you're saying, but it's not for me. That's never happened. And we've been doing this work for 36 years. So the life preserver theme seems to work well when people are drowning in their own sorrow, their own depression, their own anger.
And that's something you can kind of ask yourself of like, hey, let me grab on to this life preserver. I've been feeling a ton of resentment towards my partner. That's kind of the self-talk.
Yep, that's the self-talk. I need that life preserver. Sometimes people need a friend or a therapist to remind them that there is such a thing as forgiveness. Because honestly, the tragedy of forgiveness for me is it has not been given enough emphasis in families or communities at all, when it really is curative for relationship problems and mental health issues. It has not been given what it deserves.
Can you talk a little bit about what people go through when they choose not to forgive and what that can do to somebody?
Yes. See, we can actually chart that through what we call our control groups. Because when we do our studies, we randomize people into the experimental group where they go through this map of forgiveness that we call the process model. And the control group doesn't do that yet. But then eventually we do give the control group the forgiveness work after the experimental group ends. Here's a classic example of that. Suzanne Friedman, who's now a professor at the University of Northern Iowa, did a very courageous study of incest survivors for her doctoral dissertation at our University of Wisconsin-Madison. She had 12 incest survivors, and she asked, would you be willing to join a forgiveness intervention with me? And every one of them said, they were very kind. They said, I'll join, but I'll never forgive that guy. And so I'm going to be the one to ruin your study. Do you still want me? And Suzanne, with her knowing smile, said yes. So 6 of them met one-on-one with Suzanne for about an hour once a week for over a year, 54 sessions. The others were free to seek therapy on their own or heal however they wished as the control group. At the end of that year, those who had the forgiveness intervention with the process model went from clinically depressed. That's, in other words, when a mental health professional looks at their scores in depression, there would be concern, to non-depressed. It's not that they just improved in depression, but they're still depressed. They literally cured the depression. The control group were still clinically depressed. They then went through the forgiveness program for a year and they became non-depressed. And then we assessed the first group that did not have forgiveness for a full year now, and they were still non-depressed. So it was not just a short-term kind of palliative intervention where they were non-depressed and they went right back to depression after a while. No, they were cured of their depression, and the control group couldn't get rid of theirs until they had forgiveness.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors. Women's health, especially PMS and perimenopause, has been one of those chronically neglected areas when it comes to research and solutions. Thankfully, we have today's sponsor, Happy Mammoth. Our sponsor, Happy Mammoth, saw that there were no effective nature-inspired solutions to these issues. So they made one, EstroControl. Relationship Advice listeners can now get 15% off your entire order on happymammoth.com with our promo code IDO at checkout. EstroControl contains science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health. The way EstroControl eases PMS is pretty interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, and that is where all of our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, some women may start having PMS symptoms, like spots on the skin, cravings, and feeling low all of a sudden. EstroControl was created to help women feel like themselves throughout the whole month. EstroControl is made especially for women who are premenopausal. It's really great for perimenopause when hormones start to fluctuate and PMS becomes really rough. I personally struggle from PMS firsthand, from super discomfort to just not feeling like myself. PMS has put me through the ringer time and time again, and I know it's not just me. I've seen my relationship suffer in those times when PMS takes over. EstroControl works to relieve many of those consuming PMS symptoms, helping us regain control. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with a promo code IDO at checkout. That's happymammoth, MAMMOTH.com, and use the promo code IDO for 15% off your first order. Hey, Love Tribe, I just want to ask you a few questions. I want to know why you guys are here. Are you here because you want to stop bickering with your partner? Do you want to feel truly heard? Are you looking for ways to reignite your sex life? Or do you want to feel more emotionally connected with your partner? And let's not forget about the fun. Do you long for those fun, giggly moments at the beginning of your relationship? Over the last decade of hosting this podcast with Chase, these have been our top questions. And we get it. We've been there. And that's why we created Spark My Relationship course, because we wanted to put the tools to unlocking a fulfilling relationship right in your hands. So we're offering this course, Spark My Relationship, for only $100 until April 6th. In less than 90 days, this self-paced course will help you create more passion, improve your communication, and build a stronger, more intimate connection with your partner, all while having fun doing it. We've collaborated with over 15 psychologists and therapists to bring you the strategies that marriage therapists teach their client. This offer is only going to last until Saturday, April 6th. So head on over to our website, sparkmyrelationship.com, and use the code FLASH24 at checkout to get the course for only $100. That's nearly 60% off, and it won't last. The sale ends April 6th. That's sparkmyrelationship.com and use the code FLASH24 to get our course for only $100.
What does it look like when a therapist walks someone through the four phases? Obviously, if it's throughout the course of a year, it's intensive, but how are therapists assisting people in forgiveness process?
Well, there are a number of different roadmaps out there. Ours is just one of those. and there are different self-help books. But what I recommend if people want to use the process model is they get one of my self-help books, such as Forgiveness is a Choice, published by the American Psychological Association. The therapist have one book, the client have a book, and they work through the process a little at a time, chapter by chapter, without a timeline on that, until this client begins to show motion toward improvement in mental health. And then we're going to concentrate on relational health as well. And so I'm very thankful to the American Psychological Association for publishing several of my books on leading people through forgiveness. And for example, we just used another one of my books, this one by Norton. It's called 8 Keys to Forgiveness, with men in maximum security prison. In other words, what they have done to get them in front of the law is very, very serious. And they worked through this for 6 months through this book. And they too went from clinically angry, anxious, and depressed to normal levels. And so they can use the words of the printed matter in these books to heal.
The process, just as you've taken us through, seems super valuable. And you've mentioned this study's like very intense issues that people are dealing with, like incest. How can couples use this? And I kind of obviously see the value. If the better we're at forgiving, especially little things, like the happier we're going to be, our relationship is going to not have as many hiccups if we can just forgive simple things. But sometimes it's so hard, you know, we're in a bad mood and we want to hold on to that thing our partner says. So how would you tell couples to look at forgiveness and the phases to be able to easily apply, like on a day-to-day basis, for the seemingly smaller things?
Right. First of all, I would urge people to understand what forgiveness is without distorting it. In other words, forgiveness is not just moving on or letting it go. If you ask most people, they would tell you that's what forgiveness is, because we haven't had these kind of discussions as we're having here today that are deep. And that's sad. And so I'd say, get to know what forgiveness is. You've been treated unjustly. You're trying to get rid of resentment. And you're trying to offer goodness to the one who hurt you. And you won't be excusing. You won't be forgetting. You won't be abandoning justice, and you may not reconcile. Know that, okay? Then you can make a commitment to what we call the family as forgiveness community. And so the commitment there is we are going to try and make forgiveness a part of our life. So we might talk over the dinner table at what happened today at work, for example, and someone had difficulty with the boss and what happened there, or the children, what happened on the playground with someone who tripped them. And so you don't have to do that often, but you can keep it fresh and in front of people. You might be watching a film, and so often films start with something rather tame, and then it is escalation of conflict, and then they resolve the conflict. And you could ask, well, what would have happened if right as the conflict happened, they forgave one another? And that might be very interesting for the spouse to think about, or for the children to think about. And here's something else, though, Chase, that I think is very important, that most couples don't realize. Almost everybody who is married brings excess baggage into that marriage from the family of origin. We all bring certain patterns and woundedness from the family of origin, and we replay them. And so what I do when I talk about people who are newly married or need a booster shot of their marriage, I say this. First of all, both of you humbly think about what wounds you suffered in childhood and adolescence that you are now bringing to this relationship. And both of you do that. Then they have a thoroughgoing, honest, heartfelt discussion about how each one has brought wounds into the relationship and wounded the other. And each asks for forgiveness, and each probably will be ready to give that forgiveness and see the spouse in an entirely new way. Not someone who just has certain annoying habits, but things that are struggles for that person. And after that, see, that kind of cleanses the past. And so both are now aware of the trigger point, so to speak, from the past, so they don't continue being in that relationship. Then going with the family as forgiving community could bear much fruit in terms of happiness and deeper love and commitment and respect. Because now you can concentrate on the present issues rather than the past issues of which we weren't even aware, constantly picking away at our happiness.
Wow, Robert, that is a great outline for couples to think about and for individuals to think about. And we could just talk to you for several episodes about this because it's so fascinating. And yeah, you are really the original researcher into this field. So we appreciate you sharing your knowledge and all the work that you've done. Let's wrap up by having you tell our listeners where they can find you online. And if there's anything you'd like to leave them with, or maybe something you want to emphasize, and then we'll say goodbye.
Okay. People can find me on our not-for-profit organization called the International Forgiveness Institute at internationalforgiveness.com. And we have a lot of question and answers and blogs. I also am a regular blogger for the national psychology magazine, Psychology Today. My blog site there is called The Forgiving Life. That's actually one of my books, the title of one of my books with the American Psychological Association. And I would like to leave your listeners with one thought about what I call legacy. Usually when we use that word, legacy usually means what physically do you leave to others when you pass away, like your rocking chair or your bank account. I'm now talking about the abstract or the intangible of anger or love. Most people don't realize it, but they indeed can leave a legacy of anger in the world if they have dumped the truck of their own discontent onto their children, who now do that to their own children, who do that to their own children, so that your own children's children's children are still harboring your anger in their lives. But if you can learn to forgive, cleanse yourself of that anger, and now approach others more with seeing their own suffering and offer them love in place of that anger, you know, your love could be inside of your children, who pass that love to their children, who pass the love to their children, so that when you are no longer in this world for many, many years, even 100 years, your love could be alive and well in the hearts of those who've come after you. And so forgiveness basically brings us to a crossroads where we can go to the one side where we keep angry and make others angry where they inherit that, or we make the radical, heroic turn to forgiveness and love, loving others who not necessarily deserve it because of how they've treated us, but paradoxically we do it nonetheless, and the love lives on in our children's children's children. Which would you choose?
Well, that's so beautiful. Thank you for leaving us with that as parents. I know it's both very important for the legacy that we leave with our daughter Stella. So thank you so much for ending us with that. And we'll have the links to your books and your blog in the show notes and in the podcast description. And thank you again for taking the time to come on the show.
It's been my honor. Thank you, Sarah and Chase, for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's show, guys. As always, the links will be in the podcast description as well as on the show notes on our website at idopodcast.com. And while you're on our website, we hope you guys check out our free 14-day Happy Couple Challenge. It's a challenge where we send you a daily email for 14 days with easy, doable challenges to help strengthen and improve your relationship. And it's honestly, just a whole lot of fun to do with your partner. It's something new, and we think you guys will really enjoy it. So check it out. And while you're on the website, there are tons of free resources, as well as more information about our online course, Spark My Relationship, where our listeners can get $100 off. So check that out. You can go directly to the course website at sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. And that's where you can get the $100 off. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.